Stop the ship, you godless son of a bitch. Welcome to Quarantinima, a.k.a. Quarantinima, a.k.a. Quarantine Anima, the only podcast where we don't know how to say the name of the show. My name is Connor Sullivan. Thank you very much for joining us today. Hello. So, I've gotten to watch a bunch of stuff recently, which is cool because I feel like recently I haven't been watching a ton. You know, I talk about it all the time. Like, I go through these phases. It's like, all right, some weeks it's a video game week, some weeks it's a movie week, TV week, etc. So I'm starting to watch a couple more movies than I normally am, although I've had to wrap up some TV shows as well. So I'll talk about Peacemaker and Reacher, which I'm actually not done with yet. I still have one more episode left there. Maybe we'll save Reacher till next week, but anywho, so I have a few movies that I want to talk about today. Most notably, Warrior, which we'll get into in a little bit here. But then, little tease for later on. I got two movies that are in theaters right now that I want to talk about on vastly different sides of the entertainment spectrum. We have Flea, which is the first film to ever be nominated for Best Documentary, Best International Picture, and Best Animated Film in the same year at the Oscars this year. And then on the other end of the spectrum, we have Jackass Forever. So we'll get to talk about a little bit about everything today. So let's hop right into it. So, Warrior, Tom Hardy, Joel Edgerton, Nick Nolte. It's a Gavin O'Connor movie. We've talked about a few Gavin O'Connor movies here. He's a director you may not know off the top of your head, at least maybe not the name, but you've definitely seen some of his movies. Most notably, Miracle. We did an episode about that a little ways back, probably a little more than a year ago at this point. That was when we did the Miracle episode. Also looking back through his filmography, I've of course, he did Warrior. He did The Accountant with Ben Affleck, which is a pretty decent action movie, if you ask me. The Way Back, which Ben Affleck's not getting enough credit for, like, he's on a hot streak right now with his acting roles. You know, he had The Way Back, where he was really, really good in that movie. He had The Tender Bar and The Last Duel, and then there was a Justice League movie that in between there, but we don't have to talk about that. But anyway, in the middle of all that, there was this little movie called Warrior that came out. It came out in 2011, and it's interesting because I feel like there's not a ton of other movies about MMA or that kind of dive into that world a little bit. There's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of films about boxing and whatnot, but MMA is not really something that we see too often on film, and when we do, it's almost kind of like a punchline. You know, it's well, pun intended, first of all there. You know, it's used as something to paint, you know, traits about certain characters or, you know, funny situations or something like that. But as far as like the actual like sport of MMA and the culture that surrounds it, there really isn't a ton around it. Now, I'm not the biggest MMA guy in the world. You know, I get it. It can be very exciting. I don't think I've ever paid for a pay-per-view or anything like that. I remember when it was still Spike TV before it was Paramount. I watched like Ultimate Fighter when I was like little kid. Well, not little kid, but like I was like 12 or 13 or something like that. And I just, I don't know, there's always something good on Spike TV. And it was one of those things that like, it was just always on. So I watched a little bit of it then, but like, I'm not really a fan of the sport or anything like that. But I think that that's maybe what, I don't want to say turns me off about the movie, but I don't enjoy this movie as much as I think other people do. Warrior is was a very, very well-liked movie, and it's actually really hard to believe that this movie's 11 years old at this point. Yeah, it came out in September 9th, 2011. It only made $23 million at the box office. So it honestly didn't even make back its budget. But it has an 8.1 on IMDb. Nick Nolte was not nominated for an Oscar for it. It got nearly universal positive critical reviews. And I think, like, Well, you need to like, you know, you have to like kind of remove your brain from a movie like this, I think, because, you know, it's not, is it the most complex story in the world? No. Like, is it, if you pick the movie apart and like try and, you know, base whether or not you like the movie on certain plot points or, you know, feasibility of like, how did this happen? How did that happen? Like this and that, you're not going to enjoy the movie. You're just not. It's not one of those, you know, artsy fartsy kind of pictures. It is what it is. You know, it's sibling rivalry, in the octagon, tournament, you know, it's a tournament and they meet at the finals and it's this big dramatic thing. And, you know, it's filled with training montages and knockouts and, unoriginal characters, if you ask me. But at the end of the day, it's a very entertaining movie. It's interesting because it's not particularly funny. It's not, you know, the action scenes are good. I'll give it that. A lot of good fight sequences in this movie. The story's extremely cheesy and very predictable. The characters, both the lead characters kind of stink, if you ask me. I mean, we get to see Joel Edgerton's character. They play two brothers. We get to see Joel Edgerton's character, flesh out a little more than Tom Hardy's, although he's also, you know, much more charismatic and isn't just this kind of like piece of meat brute kind of guy. So we actually get to dive into his life a little bit, his family life and the fact that he's a teacher and he's working all these odd jobs to pay off the mortgage on his house and, you know, this and that. With Tom Hardy, it's just like, yeah, he's a Marine and he's just a fucking machine. Like he can just beat the shit out of anybody. And he immediately is like the best fighter in the world. So like, there's like little things like that where it's like I said, if you want to pick apart the movie and just be like, how would he go from, you know, a guy who just joined a gym to becoming a number one contender of the world or something like that. Just like that. That's what Rocky is. It's literally what, like, the basis of Rocky is, that he was an unknown and he got a title shot. Now, I know it's not exactly like a title or a belt or anything like that for the movie. It's the Sparta tournament, but it's this Grand Prix of, like, the best fighters in the world and stuff like that. And they do just pick these two schlubs off the street through a series of events. And they somehow get into this event that's, you know, reserved for the 64 best fighters in the world or something like that. So, the movie's a little far-fetched, but decent. I'd say it's an above-average movie to me. There are some really good parts to it. I think the MMA is just not really something I'm that into, but just because you're not into it doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. Like I said, boxing movies. I recently started boxing, because, you know, gotta be sweating for the wedding. Getting married in May, so trying to drop a couple LBs to them. But yeah, I've gotten into boxing, so like I have like, not, you know, obviously I'm just going to the gym and taking classes. Like I'm not like fighting people. But like you don't have to be interested in, you know, certain subjects or know much about it to enjoy them. Prior to, you know, the last couple of weeks or months or whatever it is, like you just don't have to be interested in a topic to enjoy a film. Like I said, boxing. Previously I didn't really know shit about it, but I enjoy boxing movies. That's just something about them. Another good example. That's the other thing is, you know, sometimes these films, like your films, are just something that it opens your mind into a world that you didn't previously know about. Like a good example, Concrete Cowboy. Came out last year, probably in like January, February, something like that. It was one of those, Netflix did that thing last year where, well, I guess they're doing it again this year, where they release a new movie every week. And one of the first ones they did in that kind of, movie dump, was Concrete Cowboy with, Idris Elba and Caleb McLaughlin from, Stranger Things. And it told the story about, you know, cowboys in urban Philadelphia, you know, this group of people who are obsessed with horses, like growing up in there's horses in the city and like there's stables and stuff like that, and like, but it's not out in the prairie or whatever you want to call it. And that was a really cool movie. And like, I just went on this like super deep dive afterwards. Like, wait, this is a real thing? I was like, yeah, it wasn't just part of the story. It's a real, real thing that happens. So I mean, the fact that I'm not into MMA doesn't really turn me off from the movie. It's just not the most interesting thing to me. Cause like, even I know it's like, this is far fetched. But like, I can also remove myself from that and just be like, okay, you know, it's a movie. Like, you know, it's Rocky. It essentially is Rocky. If Rocky had a brother, I don't know, Brocky or something like that. And like, you know, they were in this tournament that ended up fighting each other. It's literally the exact same thing. So I don't want to hate on this movie too much because, you know, it is good. I just don't, like, I feel like a lot of people love this movie. And it has an 8.1 on IMDb. That's very high. You know, that's thousands and thousands of people, you know, telling people what they think about it. And, like, on average, movies are, like, they tend to be in, like, the sixes or, like decent movies are, like, high sixes, low sevens on there. So the fact that, you know, people think that this movie's that good is really telling about what people, you know, how people feel about this film. And I don't completely agree with it. This is only like the second or third time I've seen it, I think. Of course, I've seen, you know, plenty of clips of it on YouTube over the years and in, you know, various pump up videos and stuff like that. But I guess I never really got it. Like, I'm also, I have a more like critical eye when it comes to this stuff. So, you know, it didn't really gloss over me like the first time I saw it, the way like a lot of other people did, where it's just like, this is amazing. Like, did you see? It just didn't have that effect on me. But like, I can, you know, stepping back and removing myself from it, I can see how this is a good movie, and I like it. I like this movie. I want to make that crystal clear. Diving a little more into the cast here. So, like I said, Joel Edgerton, Tom Hardy, Nick Nolte. Let's start with Nick Nolte. You know, great career for this guy. Great character actor. Very unique dude. You know, everything from his look to his voice to, you know, just so many. You don't meet many Nick Noltes on the street, and yet somehow you took that very unique character actor and you turned him into, you know, it's some of his best work. You know, it's his only Academy Award nomination, you know, over the course of his career, which has spanned, what, like 40 years or something like that. So the fact that he's, you know, he was recognized for this, good for him, you know, well-deserved. Oscar nominated? I don't really know. I mean, let's take a look at what else was nominated that year. So there's one scene in particular where, like, I like, you kind of see it from both angles where, and I'll get into this in a second, where I just want to see who he was up against for Best Supporting Actor. All right, Best Supporting Actor that year. Oh, weak crowd. Very weak crowd. Best Supporting Actor in a Performance Role. Christopher Plummer won for Beginners. He was the oldest winner at the age of 82. Jonah Hill for Moneyball, Kenneth Branagh for My Week with Marilyn, Max von Sydow for Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, and Nick Nolte for Warrior. Oh man, oh, that's right, this year was horrible for movies. The best picture race this year, The Artist won. That should tell you all you need to know. Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, Hugo, Midnight in Paris, Moneyball, The Descendants, The Help, The Tree of Life, and War Horse. Ugh, what a terrible year for movies. Moneyball's awesome. I love Moneyball. Loved Midnight in Paris. Jean Dujardin won Best Actor that year for The Artist. And then he appeared like a year later in The Wolf of Wall Street, and I don't think I've ever heard from him ever again. I'm looking through some of the other movies that came out that year just for something redeeming. Yeah, Melissa McCarthy's nominated for Bridesmaids. I'm looking for something that's just like some movie that was like, how did this guy not get nominated? How did Ides of March was really good. Why was that not nominated? But yeah, Tree of Life, what a pretentious piece of shit that movie is. Oh my God, this was a terrible year. Okay, I'm not gonna dwell on this one much longer. Drive. No, I'm still dwelling. Drive was also nominated. We did an episode on that. Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Was that the second one? Nope, that's the first one. The second one, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That was fucking sweet. All right, so we'll just chalk that up as a bad year for the movie. Kind of like this year's, if you ask me. But anywho, Nick Nolte gets nominated. And, you know, whether or not he should win among that crowd, I don't really know. I mean, I would pick Jonah Hill, but I also didn't see the other ones. So there's two scenes that are I know the scene that got Nick Nolte nominated for sure. And it's the scene in the diner where Tommy and he plays Paddy Conlon. Nick Nolte does. Paddy Conlon, Tommy's played by Tom Hardy. And Tom Hardy, reconnects with his father after, 14 years, he says. And he tells him that, you know, he's training for this big fight and he needs him to train him for this fight. You know, of course, the washed up old Irishman can train people, which is weird because, I don't know if he's, like, training him in, like, MMA stuff. I don't know. But either way. Tom Hardy's character asks Nick Nolte to train him, and Nick Nolte just gives an awesome monologue. Really just fucking nails it. It was just like, all right, like, no fucking around. Like, you know, at this point, like, his son's he's a drug addict, and, you know, he was drunk when they reconnected, and he's an ex-alcoholic himself, so he's trying to stay on the straight and narrow. And he just gives an awesome, awesome response to him. It was just like, all right, I'll do it. But remember, like, you came to me. We're going to do this my way. So, and he just, like, lays into him, tells him all the shit that they're going to do, all the stuff he needs to stop doing and stuff like that. And it's a really, really, really good monologue. Then there's a scene where, Tom Hardy's, you know, pushing him away and stuff like that, just because it's this broken family. And that causes Nick Nolte's character to relapse, so he starts drinking again. And throughout the course of the movie, he's listening to Moby Dick on tape. And, you know, the movie's like, I think it takes place over the course of like 2 months or something like that. And apparently, Nick Nolte's character can't finish Moby Dick on tape in 2 months. Which, whatever. But there's one scene where, once he relapses and he's drunk in his hotel room and he's just yelling, like, he's wearing headphones listening to his book, and he's just yelling at Ahab to stop the ship over and over and over. And he's just like, he's red in the face and he's screaming. And, like, you could tell, like, that's what they wanted the Oscar moment to be, was like where he, like, finally, like, breaks down and, you know, it's just like screaming and stuff like that. But, like, it didn't land. It does not land. It's not very good. I mean, damn, dude. Like, that. Like, I watched it this time, and I was like, oh my God, like, he got nominated for an Oscar for this? Like, this is terrible. But then, you know, like I said, you go back earlier in the movie, and you remember that scene where, he's telling Tom Hardy what's what in the diner, and you're just like, oh yeah, that's why. So, you also have, like I said, you also have Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton. Let's get into Joel Edgerton first. I love Joel Edgerton as an actor. I think he is very, very unique. He's sneaky been around a really long time. You know, one of his earliest roles is as Uncle Ben in Star Wars. What is it? Not Return of the Jedi, obviously. The third prequel, whatever you want to call that. So, but no, I mean, he's been in a lot of really good movies, both as the lead and as, you know, a character actor, or, you know, in these unique supporting roles. King Arthur, that was the movie I was thinking of Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith. But you know, I'm looking through his filmography here. Oh my God, I just X'd out of it. I'm an idiot. King Arthur, it's a movie we just talked about a couple weeks ago on here. I think I watched it on New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve by myself or something. And relax. It was the end of the night. He's in King Arthur from 2004. He's actually in two of the Star Wars movies. He's in Phantom Menace. Attack of the Clones as well. Smoking Aces, love that movie. Actually, I wonder if that's streaming anywhere. Got to check that one out again. Zero Dark Thirty, Animal Kingdom, The Thing, The Great Gatsby. Yeah, he's Tom Buchanan in The Great Gatsby. Exodus. He's really good in Exodus. Black Mass. Oh, I loved Black Mass. That's a fucking awesome movie. Midnight Special. It Comes at Night. Really, really good under the radar horror movie. If you haven't seen it, again, It Comes at Night. Bright with Will Smith. It's a Netflix movie. I mean, he's been all The King. You know, with Timothy Chalamet. He was in The Green Knight last year. One of the only good parts about that movie. So he's had this really interesting role where he's like a career where it's combo of, you know, lead roles and supporting roles, and he's, you know, despite, I mean, I wouldn't call him a traditional, like, leading man, I guess, but, you know, he's got leading man looks and leading man talent, and, you know, he's been in some pretty high-profile projects. You know, he's been both a good protagonist and antagonist. You know, he's really got tremendous range, he does, and I love Joel Edgerton as an actor, I think. He's really one of the he's like in this weird in between like character actor and leading man, whatever like the middle is there. But he's great. I think he's a phenomenal actor. You know, no exception. You know, in this movie here, the contrast between him and Tom Hardy's character. I mean, it's also just a much more fleshed out character. Really, and they give him a lot more to actually do. But I just think he's so good, you know, in this movie. Not saying like he deserves like Oscars or anything like that, but I mean, he just does a phenomenal job, you know, with his underdog role here. And then Tom Hardy, and I'm gonna go back and double check this, but Tom, this is around the time in Tom Hardy's career where he like blew the fuck up. Obviously, you know, he'd been acting for a while before this. Band of Brothers is one of his earliest roles. That was in the 2001. Black Hawk Down came out the same year. You know, he was also he was a soldier in both of those. Then what was it? What's his Bronson? That's it. That, you know, he has a really, really amazing part in this film, Bronson, which if you've never seen it, I 100% recommend it. It's from 2008. He plays a boxer in that movie, boxer / prisoner. Really, really unique film. So go check that out if you haven't seen it before. And, you know, there's a bunch of stuff in between. But I think his kind of like, I think Bronson kind of put him on the map. And then Inception, which came out in 2010, that was like, okay, this is Tom Hardy. Like, now, here he is, like, with a prominent role in a, you know, stealing scenes in a Christopher Nolan movie. And then after that, just, like, listen to the run he goes on. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, Warrior, This Means War, which we'll forget about that one. Lawless, amazing movie. The Dark Knight Rises, where he plays Bane, which is probably his most notable role. Or his most famous role, Locke, really cool role for him there. The Drop with James Gandolfini, Mad Max Fury Road. I take it back. Mad Max is probably his most prominent role, but Bane is, you know, also a hell of a character. Legend, The Revenant, for which he got an Oscar nomination for. Taboo, which I think he was. Did he get an Emmy for that? No, I guess he didn't. I saw Taboo's cool. I remember seeing it, liking it, and I never finished it. It was a show on FX. I didn't really get. I think I got like 3 or 4 episodes into it. It's very British. Dunkirk, and of course now he's got the Venom franchise and his recurring role in Peaky Blinders as well. So Tom Hardy, you know, Warriors near the beginning of this huge decade. You know, not many actors from 2010 to 2020 had, you know, a better career than Tom Hardy did. So, you know, ironically, I don't think this is some of his best work. I'd put it in, you know, the bottom tier of his career. Obviously, you know, it's one of his more popular films, but it's, to me, like, he just, they don't really give his character anything to do. He's kind of just designed to be this, like, machine who can just beat the shit out of people, and that's kind of what he does. Of course, he doesn't really say much. That's part of his character. It's not his performance that stinks. In my opinion, it's a poorly written character. But he does exactly what's asked of him. He is essentially there to beat the living shit out of people, and he does just that. And you can see the, it's funny, you can see in his shoulders, there's deltoids or whatever, like, you can see the muscles that he got from this movie that he, you know, got even bigger in Bane, but, like, you start to see that, like, that build that he has, that very unique form, because, you know, he's shirtless, you know, half the movie, but he's just like, oh my god, like, this dude's fucking huge, and he's really not. He's only, like, 5'9", I think, something like that. Actually, I'm going to look that up because I don't want to disparage his good name. Yeah, he's 5'9". Okay. Tom Hardy, one of my favorites. Joel Egerton, also one of my favorites. I think that's what I enjoyed the most about this movie is that, like, you know, it's two of my favorite actors doing, you know, a pretty cool role. Yeah, there are cool roles for both of them here. Also in the film, Jennifer Morrison, Frank Grillo, Kevin Dunn. Kevin Dunn's a pretty good character actor that I bet you've probably seen in a lot of stuff before, but maybe you just don't recognize him. You know, he's in the Transformers franchise. He's on Veep. Who does he play on Veep? He's like he's Ben Cafferty on Veep. He's like the campaign manager, I think he is. Something like that. Gridiron Gang. I also recognize him from that. So he's not quite a cheddar bob, but he's a character actor in the fact that, like, he's always like a everyman, like, person of authority who didn't ask to be in that role. You know, he's like Gridiron Gang. He's, you know, he's like a correctional officer or, you know, something with the judicial system. Veep, you know, he's, you know, the backside of politics. Like, he's a great, he's a really, really good character actor. And if you see him in something, you can probably tie him back to something that you've seen here as well. Frank Grillo, I do not recognize from anything. apparently he's in the MCU. He's in one of the Captain America movies, but do not recognize him from not a darn thing. And Jennifer Morrison, she was on House for a little while, but I did not. I've seen House, but I don't really know much about it. You know what? Let's go over some Digi Knows, and then we'll get to our rapid fire reviews. So, Warrior, did you know? Joel Edgerton tore his MCL in the cage during production, halting fight scenes for 6 weeks. Tom Hardy suffered a broken toe, broken ribs, and a broken finger. That's gotta be tough. Like, what do you do for 6 weeks? Like, if you're those guys, like, especially if you're like Joel, like, do you just, like, work the production schedule around and try and get the scenes where, like, he's not exactly mobile? But, like, first off, good on Joel Edgerton. I know he's not, like, going out there and, like, actually fighting, but, like, good on Joel Edgerton for, you know, getting back and doing the fight scenes in 6 weeks. After he tore his MCL, that's not easy. I will say, with the editing in this movie, though, it is, with Edgerton's character, it's a little more obvious when there's, like, stunt people and, you know, like, cutting away from, like, pads or something like that. And, you know, a lot of the hard hits where he's getting, like, slammed on the floor or, like, you know, hard contact, stuff like that, they kind of cut around that stuff, which is interesting, so... it's just one of the things that I didn't really notice it before, but, you know, I'm watching obviously with a more critical eye this time. So that was one of my issues with the fight scenes, but good on Joel Edgerton for toughing out and doing this movie on one leg. All right, next up. On the first day of shooting, the crew gave Nick Nolte a standing ovation after the first take of a scene shot at a local diner. The scene was later cut, but appears as a DVD extra. How lame must that be? Like, you know, you get this you get a standing ovation from the crew, and you know, it was a small production, you know, relatively small. It was like $25 million. You know, I say that's small, but you know, we all know what that means. you know, you put out, you must be feeling like you're on top of the world. I mean, and he, of course, he ends up getting an Oscar nomination for it, so who cares? But like, you know, you got the standing ovation from the crew, doesn't even make the movie. I wonder if like the Gavin O'Connor and his team, like when they saw they're just like, ah, oh, shit, this doesn't work. all right, moving on. The final. Did you know? I'm just trying to find a good one here to end on, and there's not many of them. No, not that one. Not that one. Oh, here we go. Co-writers Anthony Tambakis and Gavin O'Connor, who were introduced by comedian Brian Callen, who plays himself in the movie, alongside writer Sam Sheridan. Callen dated director Patty Jenkins for 9 years, and she is now married to Sheridan. So, how about that? So, I don't really know what, how... Oh, okay, alright, so... Why does this matter? Okay, whatever. Brian Callen, he's another actor you might recognize. If you've seen the Hangover movies, just the first one, he's the guy who runs the wedding chapel where Ed Helms and Heather Graham's characters get married. And he's also an Old School. You know, he's one of the Godfather, anything for the Godfather, like one of those guys. I've seen him around. He's a funny guy. Oddly, he plays himself in this movie. I don't know if he's like doing a Joe Rogan thing or what, but who knows. Anyway, Warrior, let's rate the movie, scale of 1 to 5 hazmats, as we always do here. And I'm gonna give Warrior, I'm just gonna give it a 3. Yeah, 3 is enough. You know, it's good, not great, definitely flawed, but entertaining throughout. You know, love Tom Hardy, love Joel Egerton. It's just a good sports movie, and it's a sports movie that we don't, about a sport that we don't see a ton of. So it's kind of got like a stranglehold, no pun intended, on the MMA game. You know, like I feel like it was this big, great, successful critically, and with audiences, but it just didn't make that much money. You know, so it's this successful movie that really, and the MMA genre in film is not very expansive, but it kind of, you know, I don't want to say like put MMA on the map, but like it's this unique movie that really, like, whenever other MMA stuff like comes along, it's going to be compared to Warrior, I feel like. And I'm looking at other like similar movies on IMDb. There's just not a ton of MMA stuff, so good on these guys. You know, it's a unique movie, and it kind of stands by itself in a genre for a sport that's really is quite popular. It's not you know, on the level like football or basketball or you know, anything like that, but it's an extremely popular sport. So anyway, that was Warrior. It's on Netflix. You can go check it out right meow. Alright, so let's get to some rapid-fire reviews. I only have 2 movies that I want to talk about this week, then maybe we'll talk about a little TV, just a little bit. Not a ton, just a little. First one, like I said, we're talking about 2 very different sides of the spectrum, so let's talk about the good side first, and that is Flea, which, as I mentioned at the top of the show, it's the first film to ever be nominated for an Oscar for Best Animated Feature, Best International Film, and Best Documentary, all in the same year. So that's really, really cool. So if you... I had to see it at this wonderful little theater in Lowell, Massachusetts. It's called the Luna Theater. If you're ever around and you're looking for stuff that, you know, it's an independent theater. So limited releases, old films, a lot of documentaries as well. So if you're ever in Lowell looking to, you know, catch some films that you might not see otherwise, go check out the Luna Theater. And it wasn't an ad. That was just a recommendation. But yeah, maybe they should pay me for this shit. Anywho, Flea tells the story of a man named Amin who grew up in Afghanistan but had to flee the country as a young boy. And it talks about, and you know, it explores his journey as, you know, leaving Afghanistan. And, you know, he had to stay in Russia for a little bit. And it's all about, like, there's a lot that goes into, like, human trafficking. And, you know, people looking for asylum and stuff like that. So basically he's trying to get to Sweden. He's trying to get from Afghanistan to Sweden to be with his brother who lives in Sweden. And it's him, his two sisters, his brother, and his mother. And it's a... I don't want to go into too much because it's one of those things where it's like the less you know about it, the better. But just a heartbreaking and incredibly powerful story. It's a very humbling film. You know, it really makes you appreciate, you know, like me especially, you know, I grew up in a, you know, little suburban Massachusetts town, never had any, you know, real problems like that. And then you forget, like, there's people out in the world that are going through shit like this guy, you know, what he had to go through. So the movie is told... it's really, really unique. So they filmed it as a documentary. So, you know, they found this guy, they filmed him in person, but they drew over all of the footage. So it comes off as an animated film, but the audio is still real. So you're essentially watching an animated documentary. And then, like when there's flashbacks and, you know, he's, you know, making stuff about, you know, he's telling stories about how... they got out and just all the crazy adventures he was on when, you know, he was going through this journey. Those sequences are all animated and, you know, a couple different ways. So it's a really, really amazing picture. I can't stress that enough. If it had I seen it last year, I think it probably would have been in my top 10, possibly top 5 movies that I saw last year. So I'm going to be rooting for Flea this year in those three categories. I don't know about Best International Picture just because, what is it, Drive My Car is nominated for Best Picture and Best Director, so we'll see about that one. But documentary, it should walk away with, and animated film, we'll see. I've seen Encanto, I haven't seen the other ones, but this is just really, really special. I've been not reading about it, but like it's been on my radar for like a year or so. I think it was in Sundance Film Festival last year. So, you know, it's been on my radar for a while, but like I said, it's an international documentary. It's an animated international documentary. There's not a big, you know, commercial appeal for this movie yet anyways. So I had to wait for it to come around. You know, like I've been checking this thing for months, seeing when it's going to pop up. I bought a ticket for this like 10 days in advance, and the theater wasn't sold out or anything like that. But like once I think I saw the nominations, excuse me, the Oscar nominations come out. I saw that Flea was up there. So I just like, all right, like let's check on Flea. Like when's that coming out? And it's like, it's playing in one theater near you. And it's happened to be the theater, you know, right in my backyard. So yeah, that was Flea. Go check it out. Like I said, it's in limited release right now. I don't know about any streaming availability, but if you get a chance to see it in theaters, I highly, highly recommend it. Are you fucking kidding me? And I just pulled it up and apparently it's on Hulu. God damn it. I paid fucking $12 to see it. And it's on Hulu, son of a bitch. I don't know if it's free on Hulu, but we'll see. Alright, so that's Flea, and then let's get to the other side of the spectrum. So before I started recording, I had just come back from the movies, and I saw Jackass Forever. That's right, I am 29 years old, it is 2022, and I went to go see Jackass Forever in theaters by myself. And it was... It's not as good as the other ones. You know, all the guys are old now. They tried working in a bunch of new guys, and, you know, the stunts are a little stale. You know, nothing you really haven't seen them do before. But I loved every second of it. I just love the Jackass guys. They're some of the funniest dudes that I've ever you know, been around. This is the first time I've seen a Jackass movie in theaters. I was, and the first two, I know I was too young to go see it in theaters. I mean, there's no way my parents were going to let me. I don't know why I didn't see the third one. I think it came out in 2010. So I would have been 17. I guess I just didn't see it in theaters. I know I didn't see it in 3D, that's for sure. But, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, guys get hit in the balls. Guys are doing stuff to their dicks. You know, there's funny outfits and, you know, guys are going down ramps and getting flung up in the air and hurting each other and guys are getting tasered and it's, yeah, it's funny. You know, it's, there are some parts that were like, laugh out loud, like, this is fucking awesome. Like, this is, you know, the Jackass I know and love, but like, it is a little repetitive, you know, at points. Danger Aaron is really the star of the show in this one, obviously. And, you know, it's not the same old Jackass, you know, obviously, no Ryan Dunn, unfortunately, you know, rest in peace. Bam Margera is not in it for a combination of personal and legal reasons. But most of the crew is back, you know, Johnny Knoxville is doing Johnny Knoxville things. He doesn't really do, I mean, he's kind of the de facto like host of the show. Like he's always like, I'm Johnny Knoxville and this is this, and then he like presses a button and then everyone else will like get hit in the nuts with something. But he does do his signature you know, get hit by a ball stunt. Oh man, Jackass is just, I really want to go down a rabbit hole. I don't have Paramount Plus yet, but I would imagine that's where all the Jackass stuff is sitting because it's you know, an MTV thing. But I really want to go back and watch the old show and the old movies. Because, like, Jackass 1, 2, and 3, 2 in particular, it doesn't get enough credit for being as hilarious as it really, like, when you talk about, like, funniest movies of the 21st century, Jackass is almost always left out of the conversation just because of how low brow the humor is. But Who doesn't like these movies? Like, if you don't, you know, if it's cringeworthy for you and, like, you don't like seeing people get hurt and stuff like that, I completely get it. But some of the stuff they do is just so goddamn funny. It's so clever, but also just stupid and mindless. And, like, my friends and I, we couldn't get enough of this shit when we were growing up. You know, it's, Jackass is something that needs to be enjoyed with others. So I really wonder what I would have thought of the movie if I went to go see it with someone else. Wasn't meant to be. you know, I think it's been out for like 2 or 3 weeks now, and like I've been trying to round up a posse to go, but it just hasn't worked out yet. And I was like, you know what, I want to see this movie before, you know, it leaves theaters. So I just went by myself today, and you know, it was what it was. I'm not saying it was bad. I'm not saying it was great. Just, you know, it was Jackass. But like all the guys are old now, so you know they're a little more limited and conservative in what they do, and there's all these new guys highlighted by this new character named Poopies. And it's, and like, so it's the same thing where it's like, yeah, okay, like they got me with Johnny Knoxville's back, and you know, Pontus and Dave and Aaron and Wee Man and Preston and Steve-O, of course. But then, you know, all this, half the stunts are being performed by dudes you've never heard of or never seen before. So it's like, you know, it's the classic bait and switch. But at the same time, it was funny enough that, you know, I just enjoyed it. You know, I want all the Jackass content I can get, like whether, like whenever those guys pop up on podcasts or, you know, they do behind the scenes stuff or those like kind of like the documentaries. It was like 2.5, 3.5. You know, the making of, there's the Ryan Dunn special as well. You know, I can't get enough of that stuff. They're just such a funny group of guys that were, you know, a big part of my childhood, so to speak. You know, teenage Connor loved Jackass, and his friends loved Jackass. And you would be hard-pressed to find people who weren't, you know, back in those days. So Jackass Forever, it's in theaters right now. See it with a friend. That's all I got to say. It's something that, you know, it's one of the the great franchise out there that needs to be enjoyed, you know, in the company of others. There, you know, it wasn't an empty theater. So like that made it a little less depressing, but but we're all good now. Yeah, other than that, I really think the only other thing I had was Peacemaker's over. So no spoilers here, but Peacemaker, wow, what a goddamn good show that was. I don't love the DCEU. I think now that they're starting to branch away from like Batman and Superman, like, you know, some of the other bigger properties there, I think that like I love the Suicide Squad. Yeah, I really like the Suicide Squad, and I thought Peacemaker was a great spinoff of that. John Cena's hysterical. The rest of the supporting cast is great as well. James Gunn is just like, I think he's established himself at this point as like he's the funniest writer director in the game right now. Like, who's close? Comedy's so hard to do right now just because of like the landscape of the world and everything. But James Gunn is just, you know, fearless with this stuff. Like, it really is amazing. He was able, he was able to get away with half the stuff he did in this movie. But and of course, the theme song, the title sequence for this one is legendary. Definitely a top fiver for me. We should do that sometime. Our top five TV theme song like intro things. I don't know when we'll do that, but maybe we will one day. I want a guest for that one. Yeah, Peacemaker, it's on HBO. Go check that out. Righteous Gemstones is also plugging along. I think it either finishes this week or it finishes next week, but Righteous Gemstones is, you know, second season is delivering. The first one was so goddamn funny, and the second one hasn't missed a beat at all despite the extended layover because of COVID. And Reacher, like I said, I think I mentioned it last week, but it's an awesome like turn your brain off kind of show. I've been watching it for like 2 weeks now, and it's only eight less than 60 minute episodes, and I'm still not done with it. I'm taking my sweet ass time with Reacher. I'm not binging it. It's been my like go to bed show, because it's perfect. Like, I need no brain power to watch and enjoy that show. But actually, honestly, I'm probably gonna, once this call's over, I'm probably gonna just throw Reacher on and finish season one. So, but anyway, that's gonna do it for this episode. You can give us a follow in the meantime on social media. We're at QuarantinemaPod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We actually use the Twitter page now, so go check us out there for reviews as soon as I'm done watching movies. Yeah, you can also subscribe to the channel, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever podcasts are heard, really, you can find us there. So that is going to put a bow on it. Thank you all for listening. I will see you guys in March, I think, right? Next episode, let's see, this drops on 2/21. Where is my thing? There we go. Nope, February 28th, we'll see you guys. So I will see you on February 28th. All right. Don't be a hero, stay inside, and watch a movie.